This is the Gayserve update for January 7th, 2018. I'm Cleveland Genolfo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Dan Red Victoria.
So it's a new year, new start. Hopefully some fun things coming in 2018 for the gaming industry and for Smash Bros. As a whole. So, yeah, look forward to that. In the meantime, we're freezing our nuts off, so that's great. Mm-hmm. most of us here on the East Coast are. I don't know about, well, obviously California is not being hit with snow, like, so that's great. This week we also have CES to look forward to. There's going to be some interesting stuff to take from there. Usually there's not a lot of gaming announcements over there, but the smaller companies tend to still show there. So, yeah, we're going to have some fun looking at what they have to offer.
I know one in particular that's going to be very telling in their direction with their CES outing, but more on that in a bit.
Yeah. Mm. But, in the meantime, we've kind of started off the new year probably doing a bit of gaming on our own. It's been, back to Diablo 3. I continue to go back there, finished off the campaign on the PS4 version. So now I'm going through just adventure mode and going through the Darkening of Tristram event again, which is a lot of fun still. I love the way that game just makes itself look like crap just for this event. it's kind of fun. So if you have Diablo 3, head over to New Tristram. You'll find a portal there, and get down there and have some fun.
That's not in this season, is it?
No, it's just a seasonal event you can just drop into.
Okay.
Yeah. So good fun there. How about you, Pat?
Well, my copy of Kamen Rider Climax Fighters finally arrived from Singapore, so I've been playing a little bit of that. I'm not so heavily into it that I can really give an educated assessment of it, but I'm having fun with it for what it's worth.
Is it like Dissidia, but Kamen Rider-ish?
Sort of. Hmm. It's sort of like Dissidia and Power Stone had a baby.
Okay.
I enjoy it. I definitely want to put some more time into it. The character roster isn't exactly what I would have liked it to be, but this is the first game in this particular series, so I suppose expecting a great roster from the onset would have been a little unrealistic. But it's got room to grow. So that's been fun, and there are quite a few Kamen Riders in there that are very fun to play. I'm still working out which ones I'm going to be focusing on as possible mains, but there's enough of a roster there that if you don't find any characters that are fun to play, it's not their fault. So that's good. One thing that's been kind of weird in the last couple of weeks, I once swore that I would never go back and play Ultra Street Fighter 4, but here we fucking are. So that's been a thing.
You feeling okay?
It's pertinent to a certain project that Phil, I know you and I have been working on for a little while now. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to when we can really discuss it at length, but it's... I'm emphasizing the importance of supporting fighting games that really are not given their due longevity. And Ultra Street Fighter 4 is a prime example of that in today's fighting game landscape. And so I am finding ways to play it and enjoy it for what it is. Without feeling any of the pressure of needing to make myself a top player now, because I have other games for that. And at this point, I really just want to be another player for this game, because it definitely needs the support. Mm. What happened to it, as much as I hated playing the game when I was taking it seriously, what happened to it when Street Fighter V came out was fucking criminal. And good things are happening. That's all I really want to add to that. Okay. And then, of course, Street Fighter V, because I'm always playing Street Fighter V.
Yeah. So, and we're getting ready for Season 3 and Arcade Edition to drop.
Yes, Arcade Edition comes out next week.
Yeah. Yes, it does. Mm. And it will be good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been my week.
All right. Well, as for me, it's pretty much been taken up with Xenoblade Chronicles 2. And I talked a bit about it during Let's Weekend, so I'll kind of repeat what I said there, which is the game is good. Graphic-wise, it's great. The anime-style character design isn't as bad as I think some people think it is. It's actually pretty nice, I think. I will say, though, if there is one criticism of the game that I have, it's that the voice acting, it's not that it's necessarily bad, it's just that it's kind of broken. Basically, you know, they got, for one thing, they did get sort of a mostly English voice cast back, which, you know, mostly UK voice casts, which I'm completely cool with, because that's one of the things I loved about the original. But the problem is that because they're, well, first of all, the lip syncing is non-existent, which doesn't really bother me all that much, but, can be pretty obvious at times.
That's kind of one of those things that you get used to when you play a lot of JRPGs. You're just going to see that.
Yeah. Also, there are like some awkward spaces and pauses here and there. Like sometimes you can tell, like, you know, the way that they were putting together all the voice recordings that, parts of it were probably recorded before others because the emotions don't quite interact with each other all that well.
Yeah.
And then there's the problem with the Nopon, which are the, anybody who's played Xenoblade games know they're the little puffball rabbit-eared people that are kind of like the mascots.
Hmm.
And the problem is they also give them the regular human UK accents, but the thing is Nopon's sort of speech patterns, the sort of like cutesy kind of third-person way they talk and the way that, you know, their speech is kind of clipped, it doesn't really work that well with the regular UK voice cast. It's just really awkward. It's not, now, going further in the game as I am now, it's not as bad as I originally thought it would be. It actually isn't as bad, because the first instance you get in the game is just, oh, it's bad. It's almost embarrassing, but it gets better as the game goes on, so... Other than that, you know, everything's good. The game hub, the UI isn't nearly as convoluted as the first Xenoblade was. They've streamlined a lot of things. It's easier to work with. There is still the problem of, you know, since you're out in the open world and you're, you know, fighting a random enemy that, you know, you'll be fighting an enemy that's, you know, within your, you know, your level, your level range where you can safely fight them and not, you know, get your ass kicked in one hit unless, you know, you're a little too close to that rampaging giant ape creature who's like 20 levels higher than you are and who will occasionally get really territorial and decide to edge up on you in the middle of the fight and kill you in one hit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Other than that, good game.
Yeah. It sounds like they improved it in the areas that it kind of needed to be, but there's still some rough patches.
Yeah. But,
I mean, from what I've seen, like, the only bad review I actually saw was the one from Schreier, right?
Yeah, from, what was it, Destructoid or Dorkly or...
It's at Kotaku, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Kotaku.
I think the only, like, really, really bad thing I think people have been agreeing on is the fact that it plays terribly on handheld. Can you confirm that?
I have not played it on handheld. Okay. So I actually make a point of... You know, I've played Super Mario Odyssey on handheld, and it works just fine. But I have not played it on handheld, and I do not intend to.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But that's me. So what about you, Chris?
So like Phil, I've been playing Diablo 3, though I've been trying out the new Necromancer since that is on sale this week. And I ended up starting a season character first for whatever reason. I remember trying to play Diablo 3 a couple months ago and there was no season going on, which was weird. And so I just jumped on it the first time I saw it. I was like, oh, season. Okay. And Necromancer is just crazy.
Yeah.
It's like a good power fantasy class, especially early on, because you can't do much with the corpses that are lying around for the first few levels. But once you get the ability to explode them, then it starts just going off. As one of the ones you get after that is you can have like a crew of skeletons. Then I had the skeleton mages that I can just summon. So I'm just sitting here holding X to launch out my whatever bone spire thing that builds up my mana so I can just create all these skeleton mages that just mows down every enemy that's around me. And then my skeletons and my golem are also going around killing stuff, and it's just nice. It's not too different than the Witch Doctor, where that class can sort of summon this crew of it's a golem, a couple of like wolf things, and a couple other things, like have this crew going with you. It's sort of similar to that. But here it's a lot more creating these corpses on the ground that you can just explode and do all this sort of crazy stuff with them. There's just effects going all over the place. That is nice. I'm playing on, I forget what difficulty it is. It's like the fourth difficulty. I pumped it up to Torment. And it took me like 40 minutes to get through a dungeon. It's just like way too much. So I bumped it back down, and that's a little bit better. But I wasn't getting loot dropping for whatever reason for most of that dungeon. It's like that first dungeon you go into to get the crown. And for whatever reason, I wasn't getting any good loot to drop. I don't know if I was doing something weird or if it was just bugging out or whatever. Because I had plenty of it from the first part of the game up to that point.
I think if you switch difficulty, you stop getting loot until you quit out of the game and jump back in.
Yeah, that's not great. But the only thing I don't like about that sort of thing is you don't know when it's saved when you try to quit out, because it doesn't really save when you quit out.
Yeah.
So there have been times like I warp back to New Tristram and then quit out, and I'm back at the other place I was at. Weird stuff like that, but so far so good on this Necromancer thing. I'm going to start a main Necro and play with some more with that. But yeah, it's kind of overpowered and kind of crazy, except when you go into some of the like the cellars early on where there's like gold enemies.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm going to just keep dying at this because this guy's way too powerful for what I can do. But yeah, it's pretty nice. I'm going to be playing some more of that. I got right back into Persona 5. Playing some more of that. I'm still in the Kamoshida dungeon. Making my way through that. But yeah, it's been good jumping into that. And doing stupid stuff where I'm not saving as often as I should. So I lost a good bit of progress where I went to the cathedral, the gym area, where there's just a bunch of enemies patrolling there. And getting to the point where I could open up the door up top that lets me get through there pretty easily. And I died on the way going back to save. So that sucked. But yeah, I got to the point where I can potentially start doing part-time jobs, but I'm going to abstain from that for now. Just sort of get through this dungeon. But, yeah, it's been good so far. And I look forward to playing some more of that. And I also got Picross E8. It's on the 3DS, the eighth game, which the eShop description is what you would expect for a game in its eighth iteration on a platform where they're not really trying to innovate anymore, which is just pretty funny. I'm going to see if I can pull it up real quick. But it's more Picross, which is good, and it has like the kind of the pure you know, no assist mode that the Switch version does not have. That forces you to have the numbers on the sides that light up and dim as you put the right stuff in there to fill them, which this one allows you to turn that all off. Yeah, like the description is the newest version of the series with all the functions of previous titles. It's game of the Picross E series with over 500,000 downloads worldwide. Retains all the functions of Picross E7 with all new puzzles. So it's like
it's basically like, yeah, we know what the game is. Okay, that's it.
Yeah, we're not. Here's just more of that.
Yeah,
we don't need to get fancy with this thing. Yeah. But yeah, it's more good fun, and looking forward to have some more of this to do. You know, I still have Picross S on the Switch to also play. But yeah, I got all the Picross right now. And I'm still finishing on my downloads on my external hard drive. I've got like 4 left. I just finished Elder Scrolls Online, so that 76 gig download is done.
Yay.
Now I got a couple more left. All big games, so the end is in sight. Then I guess I will have all of my games attached to my account downloaded. Outside of a couple of stuff I've already ringed out, everything there was in there, or things that just don't need on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything else is on there, and it fits on a 4 terabyte hard drive and the 2 terabyte internal. So now I'm going to run out of it pretty quickly after that.
Yep.
Like I still have about 300 gigs left.
Yeah. 2018 just started. There's going to be plenty more stuff to download.
Yeah, I think I still have to install my Kingdom Hearts games. Those are like 50 each, I think.
Oof.
I think I still have to actually install Final Fantasy 14 from within
the
client.
Yeah.
I just installed the client, so I haven't gone through all that yet, so there's still more to go.
Yeah.
But for now, it's all there. Yep, so how about you, Dan Rip?
Yeah, honestly, since we're back to normal with things, not much at all. I'd be looking at my gaming lists on my PSN and Steam, and then after I look through them, I go to sleep. So it's been hard in that regard. But yeah, after listening to Giant Bomb super long Game of the Year deliberations, I started Dream Daddy, which is pretty interesting. After finishing Doki Doki Literature Club, I was like, okay, let's go ahead and try this out. Since it costs money, it should be interesting. And yeah, kind of is. There was a point where I was talking to another father, and we ended up bragging about our daughters. So when we do that, it ended up going to like a Pokemon-style turn-based battle. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And then it goes into 8-bit and stuff like that. So far, so good.
Yeah, this game is made by, is like produced by Game Grumps, isn't it?
I have no idea.
Dream Daddy? Yeah, it is.
Okay. Yeah.
Which it makes sense, because if you hear it, I mean, that's Dan Avidan doing the theme song, so.
Hmm. Oh, the music in this game is phenomenal. That's one thing I have to say. Aside from that, I've also been brainlessly and mindlessly playing Tekken 7. Not really in an attempt to get good, it's just that the game is so good. just been messing around with that. I'm almost done with all the character episodes. And then I started Guardians of the Galaxy just because I want a game that I can just sit down and just press a few buttons and be done with it. So I started it. I didn't finish Chapter 1 yet, but I will. So, yeah, pretty simple. And then once we get to Lost Sphere and Dragon Ball FighterZ, it's going to be insane again. So I'm just trying to get the mindless gaming out of the way.
Oh, fair enough. All right, so I guess we'll move on to the...
I have one more thing. I tried out the trial for the Xbox Game Pass that came with my Xbox One X, which they give you an extra month if you agree to turn the auto-renew on, which you can just turn off right away.
You get the extra month and then turn it off? Okay.
And yeah, I own most everything that's already on it. So it's not super useful for me. And like the main thing I would want to go download is Halo 5, which is 100 gigs. And I'm in the middle of finishing up my PS4 download, so I'm not looking to start any new downloads just yet. So I was playing some of the smaller indie stuff that's on there, like a game called Stereden, I think, Stereden, which is kind of like a roguelike shmup, where you are taking out enemies, and occasionally they will drop like a weapon that you can equip. You can have two different ones to switch between. So I've had stuff like homing missiles or this weird jaw that you just go around and bite other ships and just kill them that way, which obviously requires you to get up closer than you might normally would in a shmup. You take out the boss, and it'll drop like five potential boosters that are just like perks that you can equip for the next level, which is pretty cool. It's a game I always saw on sale that was cheap, that a look at the description kind of get what it was. Mm-hmm. And be like, okay, that might be my thing, but I would not be interested enough to actually go like watch YouTube footage to figure out exactly what it was. Hmm. It was just interesting enough to be like, ah, I should buy that. And like, ah, I don't know what it is really. But here I can try it out, and it's pretty neat. Also playing Skyforce Anniversary, the shooter that I already have on PS4, but the Xbox One version is also pretty good. The weird thing is it has an extra achievement in it that's to get 500,000 stars, I think, yeah. Which is the PS4 version stops at 100,000, which I think if you basically max out everything that's in the game, you probably end at about 200 or 250,000. So it's just a stupid grind achievement that people I've been seeing like talk about how much they enjoy the game just hating that achievement, because it's just makes it a boring grind if they're trying to get all that stuff. But yeah, it's pretty good. I also downloaded the Ninja Gaiden. That's one of the free Xbox games. But other than that, it's seems like a pretty good service if you don't buy everything.
Yeah, if you don't buy a lot of games, it's not bad.
Yeah, if you don't have like all the platforms and can take advantage of all the sales. Yeah, this service, it's probably pretty good for those sorts of people that don't have all the things. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, that's been okay. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay, so quick news stories to get through before we get on to our discussion topics of the week. So according to the Grapevine, Shenmue 3 apparently is going to make a 2018 release. I'm happy about this. Whether I still believe that or not, I don't know. So we'll see.
Well, it was a developer interview. No, it was on the Kickstarter page that they've got a publishing deal with Deep Silver, and they look forward to Shenmue 3 on PS4 and PC, and quote, many other surprises.
That's going to be interesting. Yeah, if it makes 2018, so much better, because that'll show that Yu Suzuki have their development stuff and their project management well in hand.
I'm very interested in the many more surprises aspect of it. Well, because YSNet and Yu Suzuki. Sega's not doing anything with Virtua Fighter right now.
Yeah.
You gotta wonder.
Yeah. I wonder when the Shenmue 1 and 2 HD remasters officially get announced, because you know they're coming.
Yeah. It has to be soon if Shenmue 3 is going to make 2018.
Yeah. So keep an eye out for that. It's a game I think a lot of us are looking forward to.
Yeah, but hopefully the control scheme isn't nearly as convoluted as the original one was.
Well, we got like 15, 20 years of progression since then. So,
yeah, and the Yakuza series,
yeah.
And
mm-hmm. So, yeah, if the controls aren't an improvement over Shenmue 2, that will have been a very big failure on Suzuki's part. But yeah,
I think they'll figure it out with their HD collection. There should be one. Come on, it has to come out.
Yeah. Well, they kind of have to at this point.
Yeah.
It should also be noted that when the first two games were being made, they didn't have a second analog stick to work with.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that some way they'll be able to integrate the fighting mechanics more into it than they were able to do with the other two.
Yeah, because
there's a fairly good and competent fighting system underneath there.
Well, yeah, it's called Virtua Fighter.
What was that? It's like you only ever used it like twice or two or three times during the entire game. So, yeah, you never really saw it much. So, all right, in other fighting news, SD Revival has announced the Tournament of Legends 3 for Canada Cup 2018, showing yes, old games. They're coming back.
Well, the last Tournament of Legends was in 2014. It was a hell of a thing. Lots of build up to it with qualifying events and Japanese invitational involvement. They're going to follow the same model this year and having lots of qualifying spots at major tournaments leading up to Canada Cup. Yeah, this is one to look forward to because you always get a really good mix of the old school and new school players. Getting into the mix, and there's talent out there that people don't know about yet, and this is a great it's a great venue to show it off.
Yeah,
and so I'm happy that we're seeing another one because it's going to be basically a year-long celebration of Super Turbo.
Yep,
which we need. Yeah. Let's be honest.
Yeah, you know what I'm kind of a little bit surprised about is how HD Remix just kind of faded away.
A lot of the changes that were implemented in HD Remix did help the balance. Other changes were implemented in the game that did not help the balance. Generally, it's regarded that their attempt to make Akuma a tournament viable character was a failure. Because he still enjoys some very lopsided matchups.
Yeah.
But all in all, it failed to be more balanced than the original Super Turbo. And the same can be said for Ultra Street Fighter 2. That one had some system problems as well that I could go into great detail on, but for the, you know, in the interest of time, I will abstain.
Yeah.
But the two big ones are the new throw mechanics that they implemented do not really work that well. And whenever somebody throws an anti-air and goes over their target, they have to land before the target will actually be able to turn around and punish. So, yeah, that pretty much breaks the game in and of itself. But there are a lot of other gripes that I could go into. So that's why Ultra Street Fighter 2 didn't really become a thing. But, honestly, I hope someday we find a Street Fighter 2 update that actually does improve the balancing. We just haven't gotten there yet, and until we do, you know, we're going to need Super Turbo there. That's why I'm glad that we have these collections coming out and the ongoing, you know, the Tournament of Legends stuff happening, the whole scene on Fightcade and so on.
Good news there. And so we have some other good news. Apparently, Zeus got a hold of Mad Catz, said, "Wise from your grave," and now they're going to be coming back.
Yeah, the Chinese factory workers who were actually building Mad Catz products decided they really liked their jobs and wanted to keep doing them out of the same factory and everything. And so they bought the company, and they've announced that the first line of products to take part in their revival will be revealed at CES. Now, the big question mark here is what of the fight sticks and fight pads that made the company relevant in the first place? Because they released a trailer that obviously gives its nods to the fighting genre, fighting game community as a major branch of the brand. None of the products that they've actually highlighted since announcing their return involve fight sticks or fight pads. So hopefully there's something like that coming, but I'm going to be really nervous until CES rolls around.
Yeah, I would be very much surprised if they didn't make a comeback, because those were actually some pretty high margin items for them. So, if they don't bring them back, no. And they're also very well needed right now. Yeah. They're much needed, because PS4 and Xbox One fight sticks are kind of slim pickings, you know?
Yeah, you've got Razer and Konba, basically, who have the market to themselves.
Yep.
And Hori, who is your only real option if you want an Xbox stick right now.
Yep.
So there's a market that's going to be in demand, especially as we get closer to the release of Street Fighter 30th Anniversary Collection.
Yeah, just don't price them at $249. That was kind of a mistake.
But yeah, it's looking good. I'm excited.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for that. CES technically starts tonight, but it's going to be tomorrow, really. So we'll keep you posted and report back on any fun announcements that we find from there. So.
Yeah.
In other news, apparently higher capacity Nintendo Switch cartridges delayed till 2019 at the very least.
Yeah. It's not like they actually need them or anything, right?
It's not like Wolfenstein 2 is coming out or anything, and you know, is actually larger than 32 gigs or anything like that.
Yeah, though I don't know that the cost for these things on the developer or publisher side is where they will still want to use those things.
Yeah.
So you already have a bunch of games that release where you download the multiplayer part of it and the single player part is on the cart.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of stuff where it's, here's what we could fit in 16 gigs and you have to download the rest. Yeah. That sort of thing. And that's because the carts are still expensive even though.
And that is something that we ran into last time we were using cartridges as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus, you know, Nintendo controls the supply of those. So, yeah, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah.
It's going to be kind of interesting to see what ends up happening here because, you know, games like, let's say, for example, Shenmue 3.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that game is going to come in anywhere under 50 gigs.
No.
The ambitiousness that Suzuki is known for, plus the quality of assets that we're going to be using. Although, you know, to be fair, since the Switch is usually running about 720p, they can afford to downscale those.
Yep.
So save some size there. But yeah, it does mean that you're, at the very least, developers have to come up with two different workflows for the various platforms that they're developing for. So yeah, it makes me wonder how many of those big developers are going to actually want to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, when they actually do put these carts on the market, I'm wondering whether or not we'd see, as consumers, prices being affected. I mean, you look at a game like Rime, or even that Street Fighter game, where they're nowhere near the price that they're selling for. They'd only be higher, wouldn't they?
Well, there's economies of scale there, so I don't think the cartridges themselves, I mean, the retail price of games themselves would be affected much. It's just a puzzling decision that Nintendo would just delay that. My thinking on it is they're delaying them deliberately, with the thought being that if they put this artificial restriction in place, the types of games that end up coming to the Switch are the more the types of games that they actually want, the more unique, the niche, the, you know, more independent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there could be an argument made for that.
Yeah.
Though I wonder if we get to a point where we get multi-cart releases.
Mm-hmm. Please insert cartridge 2.
Or you have like a, say, a Mass Effect trilogy. Mass Effect 1 is on one cart. Mass Effect 2 is on the next. That sort of stuff.
Yeah. I suppose that's a possibility as well. But that,
here's your multiplayer cart. Here's your single player cart.
Yep.
I mean, the article is all technical issues. I don't know what they may be, but yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's really technical issues. I think it's just Nintendo being Nintendo at this point. Because a Switch cartridge is based on SD technology. That's well established. Everybody knows that. So, yeah, it's just a matter of them deciding, don't want to do it right now.
So. Yeah, probably part demand as well as cost, I'd assume.
Yeah.
So in other news, we love GOG.
Yeah.
GOG is great. Apparently, Zach Barth, an independent developer, wanted to release his game Opus Magnum on GOG and was rejected.
Yeah, so this is a puzzle game, and it's actually, from what I've been told, it's not only really good, but it's been fairly acclaimed critically. So exactly why GOG isn't accepting this doesn't make any sense.
Well, GOG isn't saying. Zach himself basically was kind of the opinion that it might not have gotten through to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So he wasn't particularly surprised that this happened, but it's still kind of puzzling. Needless to say, the internet has reacted in the way that you would expect the internet to react. By throwing up fits in forums and social medias, and honestly, I think I'm going to give it to GOG on this one.
Really?
Yeah.
It's their service. They can do what they want with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not explaining why they got why the game got refused. That's actually a policy that they do across the board because the thinking of course is that if too much information is given as to what their criteria is, that people and developers will start gaming system and then we end up with kind of a Steam situation.
Yeah.
So.
Which we don't want under any circumstance.
No. I've checked today. Steam, still a dumpster fire. So, I'm going to give it to GOG on this one because, I think the only reason that this game did not get approved is, because it just kind of looks like it might be a mobile port, which I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they're setting the quality bar there. I don't know. So
I don't know. They don't have a mobile version listed on their site.
No.
It says Steam Humble Bundle and then link to their Reddit.
Yeah. So
this seems like the same sort of game this team likes to make, which is fucking nerdy-ass puzzle games.
Yeah. So.
One of theirs before was like about chemistry shit.
Yeah. It's weird. I don't know why they didn't accept it. Developer doesn't know why. But
that seems like the problem. Like the developer should have some sort of explanation.
Mm.
Like, is it you guys? Is it your thing? Or is it something that the developer did wrong?
We just don't know. And until GOG speaks up, if they ever do, we probably won't. But in the meantime, you can still get it on Steam, so you're all right there. So, anyways. In other news, RIP Kinect. I think it's pretty much official at this point. Microsoft has finally disconnected. Well, technically, they did disconnect. Yeah. The adapter the Kinect.
Oh, so it's going to be that kind of show.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Phil. He calls the SNES the SNES, so this does not surprise me at all.
No.
Hey. If you're looking to get a Kinect adapter, there are still a few of them floating around.
And now their prices went up.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yep. So,
that's great. This is really bad on Microsoft's part because I think they should have included these with the X as sort of a show of support for the people spending $500. Mm. Otherwise, they were saying, hey, spend another $40 for this thing so you can use that Kinect you already have.
Yeah.
And so now there's this whole class of games, you know, not big or anything, but it sort of goes against their whole, we're bringing all our games forward to the new consoles.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's this whole thing it's held back that now is unplayable unless they happen to have a non-Kinect mode, which I think those weird Kinect ports from the 360, they had like Zoo Tycoon and Disney Adventures or whatever it was. Like those have non-Kinect ways of playing them.
Yeah.
But like Frew and the Dance Central, the Kinect Sports game, Disney Fantasia, that sort of stuff is all going to basically die.
Yep.
So if you spend money on that stuff, it's, and you're trying to upgrade to the new thing, don't have the adapter, don't want to spend $100 on it, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm. Holy crap. $342, brand new. $157 sold, buy it now.
Yeah, that's a little bit much, I
think. He sold $157.
Yeah. Yeah, like even if Microsoft had them on their stores, $40, like, okay, that would be decent, but they don't even have them either.
Yeah. But, yeah, they don't have them on their stores, but this is not an adapter that's particularly difficult to come up with, so I would probably expect third parties to pick up the slack on this one.
Yeah, that'd be nice if we had some of that.
Yeah. It's just maybe Microsoft doesn't want to make them, but perhaps they'll license it to, you know, Madcats or whoever.
Hello, China.
Hong Kong's got your back.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'd rather buy supermarket cereal.
Can you believe they're scalping cereal now? This is
seriously.
Okay. Anyways. So in our last show, we kind of ran a bit long and we didn't get to our 2018 look ahead. So basically, while you're here, Dan, why don't we jump into that?
Awesome. Let's go ahead and do that. okay, so we're actually doing a feature next week on it written, but last week we didn't get to talk about 2018 and beyond, so I figure we should do that now. Mm-hmm. And first off, we can talk about maybe not really our most anticipated games, but like which ones off the top of your head are you really looking forward to? Are you really looking forward to at this point?
I guess I'll start. Bloodstained.
Yeah.
Yep, surely that. You know, Mega Man 11, that's coming out pretty soon. Shadow of the Colossus, still apparently a 2018 release. So
it's coming out in a month.
Yeah, so unless that gets delayed at the last minute, that's very likely to be a top contender for a game of the year, perhaps. Who knows? What else am I looking forward to? Well, Shenmue 3. We talked a lot about that a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm anticipating that. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing the rest of the Tekken 7 plans because there's still a little ways to go for that season pass and see if they maybe do an expansion or an entire revision like they've been known to do.
Well, what we have now is the revision, honestly.
They just didn't. It's the revision for now. You know, I don't know if Harada is thinking that maybe they're going to do an entirely, you know, new arcade revision and then, you know, update the PS4 and Xbox One PC versions.
That would be interesting.
But because there's still quite a few holes in that roster.
Oh, yeah.
Might be nice to start filling them. Mm-hmm. I noticed that the only characters that have come out so far have been, you know, external characters. You had Eliza and Geese so far. Noctis coming up soon. We haven't seen any returning cast. So
yeah. Hopefully that does happen.
Yeah. So we'll wait for that. So what about you, Pat?
Well, obviously I have to say Street Fighter V Arcade Edition here in a couple weeks. The strange irony here, and this is going back to the troubled launch that Street Fighter V had, but if you go back a little further, you'll get comments from producer Tomoaki Ayano, who said that it would probably be a good time to do Street Fighter V in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now we're in 2018, and we're getting the release that a lot of people feel should have been what they launched with.
Hmm.
And I feel it would have been better for Street Fighter 4 and 5 both if they'd taken that route. Everything I've seen about Street Fighter 5 Arcade Edition looks fantastic. I can't wait to actually get my hands on it here in a couple weeks. I just hope that the do-over that they've kind of given themselves with this gets the effect that they were looking for. Street Fighter V is in a good place right now, and hopefully, hopefully that can just continue that momentum. They're obviously going to get a new Metacritic entry over this, so we'll see what they do with their a second chance to make a first impression. But it looks fantastic right now. I'm really excited. And then, of course, there's going to be the Unreal Engine 4 patch coming up, and that'll make the game even better. So,
is that shipping with Arcade Edition, or is
I think it happened while they were already deep into Arcade Edition development. So, I would be surprised if it was part of that package, but I don't expect that it will be long after that they implement the fixes.
Yeah, because for those who aren't aware, that's basically upgrading the entire foundation of the game underneath all of the content that you've already developed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So stuff can break. It's not a trivial thing to do. So I'm kind of glad that they're going to do it for that latency fix alone.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it was both Street Fighter V and Tekken 7 were getting a lot of flack from the community over input lag that could be mitigated in settings if you were playing the PC version, but could not be thrown out entirely. And it got so bad that eventually Epic Games took a look at the situation and realized, oh shit, we're the assholes here. And so they, toward the end of last year, put a universal hotfix in Unreal Engine 4, and Tekken has already implemented it now, and it runs great. But we're still waiting on it for Street Fighter 5, and they weren't able to implement it right away because of Arcade Edition development.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we're going to be getting it pretty soon, and that's something to be excited about. The other game I want to talk about here is Soul Calibur 6. I think this is going to be make or break for the franchise. Because you've got two of the last three games in the series were straight up turds. And the other game out of that mix was Soul Calibur 4, and that was just kind of underwhelming. So hopefully we have another Soul Calibur 1, Soul Calibur 2 on our hands with this one. And that seems to be the energy they're trying to tap into with going back and doing a soft reboot of the franchise.
Mm.
So, I've got really high hopes for this one. Whether they're well-founded high hopes or not remains to be seen, but it's definitely something that I'm hoping the best for. And after seeing what parts of this team were able to do as part of the Tekken 7 team, I feel like I have no reason to be skeptical.
Mm. Mm.
The only thing I really do worry about is possible feature creep, because they've already talked about a few systems that are new to the series, and hopefully, once those all settle and we get used to playing with the full Soul Calibur 6 system, whatever that ends up being, it still feels like we're playing those classics, because that's one way they could easily fuck it up.
Yeah.
So those are the ones I wanted to highlight.
All right. Brandon?
All right. So my two biggest are, well, the first one is we've already mentioned, I think, more than once now, which is Street Fighter V Arcade Edition. It comes out next week.
Yes.
And there are a couple of reasons why I highly anticipate it. First one is because, as Pat said, the game is in a good place right now, and if they pull this off, they could very easily make up for all of the flack they got with the original release. So, now that we're actually going to have, content.
Yeah.
that's you know, we'll actually have what feels like an actual game and not just well,
and not just content, like all of the content.
Amazing amounts of the content, just swimming in it. But and plus, you know, like, I mean, much like Pat, I grew up on Street Fighter. You know, Street Fighter II was one of the first games I actually remember playing very, you know, passionately in the arcades. And, you know, part of the reason I loved Street Fighter IV so much was because it reminded me of that feeling. And, you know, I really want them to pull this off so well. And I think they will. Yeah. I think they learned their lesson. I hope they learned their lesson.
So I guess you're also going to be keeping an eye on Tournament of Legends as well?
Probably.
Nice.
But that's my one. I've got one other, and I'm going to be honest here. Despite my anticipations, I have had misgivings. I have had fears, specifically done to the fact that this studio's publisher recently released the game that's considered to have basically buried loot boxes for good. And I'm talking about BioWare's Anthem.
Yes.
Ooh.
And I love BioWare. Like, I am 100% a BioWare fanboy. I do not give a crap what anyone else says. I know that Mass Effect Andromeda had some serious issues when it released. They've made up for most of them. But, you know, as we found out later, the reason Andromeda came out just subpar was because EA basically pawned the game off to their B studio, you know. And, you know, all the guys that had made Mass Effect good when the game started, they had all either left the company or, you know, had moved into other ventures. But with Anthem, we now know that a lot of the A-listers at BioWare, including Drew Karpyshyn, who wrote the first two Mass Effect games, as well as KOTOR and some of Baldur's Gate, is back. Some of the other big dudes from BioWare are back too. But the problem is, after the debacle that was Star Wars Battlefront 2, you know, we all know that EA is basically the beast that cannot be fed, and it devours every game studio it comes in contact with. And I don't want that to happen to BioWare, because BioWare is too good of a company to let that happen to. And I'm hoping that with all the shit that EA has gotten, that they're giving BioWare enough room so that they don't have to constantly put in all of the crazy microtransaction and monetization garbage. Like, I know that Anthem is basically going to be a sort of, like, it's essentially meant to be a multiplayer online game, sort of like Destiny. Which, you know, again, I'm okay with that, because despite all the monetization garbage, Destiny and Destiny 2 does have solid gameplay underneath it. But, you know, unfortunately, they don't have the writing chops that BioWare has. So, again, and also, I just love the idea, the concept. You know, you're basically on this alien planet, and you're all on this colony, and you have to go out, and basically you're Iron Man in space.
Yeah.
And you can actually choose the type of armor suits, I think they're called lances. Yeah. That you can use, and each of them with different purposes. I love everything. I love you can swim. I love you can fly. And I refuse to be cynical about this crap anymore. Just because, after all of this, I finally realized and just decided that, you know, remember when it was when hyping for games was fun?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I can't. And I can't do that anymore. I can't just constantly be cynical about everything.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hold out hope that the game's going to be good.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Chris?
Let's see. The weird thing is we don't really have a great idea of what all is coming out this year, especially Nintendo. They're really silent, though they got a Nintendo Direct coming up in a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
They're promptly going to show, I guess, probably most of what they have coming out, at least in the first, you know, half of the year. I'm curious to see what exactly they're doing, but right now we know nothing. Except for, like, Bayonetta 1 and 2, that's coming to the Switch. I'm looking forward to that as, like, the entry point for me into seeing if I want 3. I think there's a lot of cool stuff Sony's got this year that might be better than they were last year, where they've got Spider-Man, God of War, they got Dreams coming out from Media Molecule. Those all look like really cool games. Detroit Become Human could be pretty cool. Depends on what else they have coming out, because there's potentially like Days Gone. I don't think The Last of Us is coming out this year. That seems like a next year, early next year game.
Yeah,
they have some cool stuff. Crackdown 3, or at least, I don't know what they're calling it at this point.
I think it's the Crackdown 3.
Okay. It seems like it changes every once in a while.
Yeah.
When they decide they want it to be a new thing or a sequel. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that as like the one Microsoft thing we know about, kind of. And especially because that game has been there, the last guardian for this whole generation.
Basically.
Where they've been trying to make it, and it just goes silent for long periods of time.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to launch alongside the Xbox One X, and that,
that
didn't happen. Left couple of Kinect games and Super Lucky's Tales, the lone figureheads of the X, and that was not great. But yeah, I'm hoping they get this all sorted out and get us a good Crackdown game, because that would be a good new thing to come out of them for the first time in a while. And I don't know, I think Valkyria Chronicles 4 could be a really big game early on this year.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one.
Because that first game was amazing and should have ushered in a new revolution of strategy RPGs, but the console strategy RPG died right around then and took that series down with it as it stuck to the PSP in a weird way. We got Ni No Kuni is also coming out around that time. There's some cool stuff, but it's just kind of still waiting for news of what else is coming. That's kind of where we're at. This is like, all right, I'm going to work on Persona 5 and some of these other games. Yeah. I got time to wait for everybody else to say, hey, this is what we're doing.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. Thanks. I'll go ahead and talk about two of mine. One I want to mention is A Way Out. That's the game being published by EA and developed by Joseph Fiers' team. He was the guy who was on the Game Awards saying "fuck the Oscars" and "fuck that shit."
So, Jeff Keighley, very, very uncomfortable.
Totally uncomfortable. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. When they first showed it at E3, I was like, "Oh, yeah, this looks like my cup of tea." It's essentially Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons in a more modern kind of world, and yeah, it looks like it's more than a walking simulator. It looks like there's a lot of action. It's just going to be hard to see if I just want to see how long it is, because I don't like live with my brother anymore. So unless there's an online option, I don't really see myself playing with somebody. But I'm hoping it's not too long of a game. I'm also looking forward to Project Octopath Traveler, because that game on the Switch had the most impressive demo I have ever played in my life, and if game is anything like the demo, I know for sure it's going to be a great title. Granted,
do you think that actually gets a normal name, or do you think they just Square Enix it and say that's the name?
Honestly, if they just Square Enix it and said that was a name, I'd be fine with it. Yeah, Project Octopath Traveler is just looking amazing. The game looks great. The voice acting, from what little I heard, was awesome. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing whether it's just going to be a whole bunch of stories like we saw in the demo, or whether it's just going to be one huge awesome experience. Mm-hmm. Look, I don't know what Square Enix is going to name it in the end, but yeah, I'm all in for this one.
Hmm.
So yeah, as far as my anticipated, those are the main two I wanted to mention. Now, if you look into all of our anticipated games, I'm sure there are some, but none of us really went into detail about specific Sony releases. And that's particularly because we don't know when they're coming out. You know, we have games like Spider-Man, we have Detroit Become Human, we have Days Gone. Like, I'm sure we have people here looking forward to those games. I'm looking forward to Spider-Man in particular. But it makes you wonder, does Sony really give a shit about release dates? Why or why not?
I think they do, but I think at this point they're gun-shy to actually announce anything until they're sure. Because I don't think they want to end up in another Last Guardian situation.
Yeah.
I mean, I get that, but they aren't even giving us windows. You know, like, it would be nice to put a release date on my calendar. If it's delayed, fine, I'll go ahead and change it. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Instead, we just get 2018 or, you know.
Yeah, I think they're just waiting until they're in the final stretch, and then they can say, hey, this is when it's going to be out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if that's a policy going forward, then that's also a good barometer of how far along a game is in development. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that may be a positive way to spin it, I suppose.
I mean, Sean Layden did mention in the press conference that every game they showed at E3 would come out in the first half, but I don't know how much flack we can put into that. Hmm.
Well, God of War, I'm pretty sure, will be first half.
Yeah, I think it's going to probably be March.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the God of War month.
Yeah. And then there's Detroit Become Human. They said spring, so that's kind of limits it to a three-month window. So April, May, June, perhaps, for one of those. June at the latest, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
The only one we're actually pretty sure about at this point is the Shadow of the Colossus, which is very strange.
That's next month.
That's next month. So.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think Sony will become concerned with release dates again when Microsoft becomes concerned with exclusives again.
Yeah.
I mean, just basing it off of last year, Sony really had a perfect storm of releases on their calendar. You know, it went with Resident Evil 7 and then Neo. Horizon was huge at was at the end of February, early March. And then they just went ahead and let the third parties take over from there. So, I don't know. Sony has a lot of interesting titles on their slate. We just don't know when they're coming out, and we hope to hear more on that soon. So, switching gears, does anybody else here have an Xbox One X other than Chris?
Nope.
Not yet.
Okay, so for, I guess we can answer this question two ways. So, Chris, since you have one, do you think the Xbox One X will turn fortunes around for Microsoft? And for those of you that don't have one, do you plan on getting one soon?
So, when we talk about fortunes, are we talking about pure sales numbers?
Yeah. Okay. Pure sales numbers, the general excitement.
Releasing a $500 console is not going to start spurring sales. It'll get the enthusiastic part of their base that was frustrated that they bought the more expensive console but had weaker hardware in it at launch compared to the PS4. Those people probably have upgraded and will, you know, trickle in. But I think it will not spur like a huge change. Nothing like what we've seen with the Switch, where as soon as that started becoming available, that thing just took off like a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you launch it during a holiday season where the S was under $200.
Mm.
They're purely just putting that there as another option, but I think they're riding the S at like a $200 sale point whenever they have the big sales to push the numbers. But I think the more important thing is they have to have the games.
Yep.
And they don't have those. You know, it's PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is the game right now.
Yeah, and that'll still be a mess.
Yeah,
it's hardly a game right now.
Yeah, it's going to keep selling well. I think Aaron Greenberg was making weird Trump-like tweets about it selling really well.
Yeah.
Like we'll have big numbers to come. it's like hashtag awesome or whatever. It's like,
I mean, they're including the game with the X now, aren't they?
Yeah, they did that like within a couple weeks of launch, which was a weird thing to do. I saw people managing to get like Best Buy or whatever to like retroactively price match it for them. You know, they price match it because they also bought that alongside it. I didn't go that far because I just didn't want to drive all the way out there to do that. So there's things like that, but we need to know what they're doing as a first party. We don't know what they're doing at all outside of like Crackdown and one or two other games. So we don't know what the Gears team is doing, what the Halo team is doing. We're pretty sure Forza Horizon 4 might be happening. Though playing 3 in their two expansions, I'm like, why do I need a 4? What's that going to do?
Yeah.
It's
because they got the. What we really need is Project Gotham Racing 5.
Yep.
Yeah. It's. They're in a weird spot, and they have not had a press conference to clarify what their first party direction is. And I got something we need to see out of them. I assume by GDC they'll probably start talking about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now it's kind of like a work in progress where they're just getting the stuff out there to try to stabilize and start improving on things.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, the Xbox One X seems like kind of a stealth play for the next generation. It's like what they're using to lay the groundwork for what will eventually become whatever, you know,
Xbox Two.
Xbox Two or Xbox One X Two or whatever they end up calling it. But it's just getting those systems in places, the rendering paths, all that, so that they can prove that 4K gaming is viable. And when it comes down to it, they've already got all of that hard work done. So the next console will just end up being just a hardware revision with more power behind it, which isn't a bad thing. To me, it seems like the Xbox One X is kind of like the iPhone X. You don't need it, but it sure is nice.
Yeah. And you kind of question whether you need that to spend the $500 or just go for the cheaper thing that does 90% of what you want out of it.
Yeah, and that's you know, you can't downplay the value of that in and of itself, because that
especially when they can throw in games and other stuff with it.
Yeah, that's been doing actually quite well for them. So and it's, you know, brings people into the ecosystem, and you know, most of the games, as long as they're not playing Kinect games, and if you're buying an S, you're probably not. Most of the games will continue to work. So maybe they buy an S now, and 2-3 years down the road, they get a 4K TV, and by then they might upgrade to a 1X or 1X2, whatever the ends up being out. So it's it seems like a good way for them to go.
Yeah.
I mean, I actually adopted myself into the 4K generation this Thanksgiving, and I've actually been looking to an Xbox One X. But then I looked over at my Xbox One, and I'm like, yeah, I don't even play you. I just you're my Cuphead machine.
And I think there's the problem.
That's exactly.
That's the main thing. So it's one of those I don't know kind of things.
It's one of those, except that, you know, since last week, my Xbox One has been doing a lot more work.
Yep.
It's now become... I use it for Kodi now, because that's now out on the Xbox One. And that is a very interesting story in and of itself. I don't know if I should go into that, but...
I didn't even know that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that started off as the Xbox Media Player and then became the Xbox Media Center, which you needed a modded Xbox to run. Mm-hmm. And then it moved over to, you know, Windows, Mac, Linux, and you could, you know, download that there, and eventually renamed Kodi, and now it's back on the Xbox. So that's fun. I'll point out that right now it's still in an early state and crashes like crazy, but it's fun. So lots of good media playback, and those external add-ons are both great and horrible at the same time. So. You can make of that what you will. So,
yep.
Yeah. Plus, you know, Forza 7 is still kind of fun but irritating, and you know. But Cuphead.
Yeah. Yep. Cuphead.
Cuphead. Yeah, so great. The Forza thing is just weird at this point because they put out so many. It's like, what else do you do?
Well, clearly, what you shouldn't do is turn earning money into a loot box driven chore. So, yeah, that's one thing you shouldn't do. So there.
Though, is that just like real life?
I have never found for that loot money. Box in real life.
That's Christmas. That's your loot box, Christmas and your birthday.
Yeah. Oh, it all makes sense.
Here's graduation.
Now.
Here's my loot boxes.
Yeah. Oh, somebody needs to make that actually
happen. The one I hear about people actually getting like Overwatch loot crates for their birthday, whatever, I'm like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
I did that last year. Speaking of turning things around, that's one thing Nintendo did in 2017. We actually just got word a few days ago that the Switch is now the fastest-selling home platform of all time in 10 months. So yep. Congrats to Nintendo on that. But that being said, we're in 2018 now. As Chris mentioned, we don't know what's coming out. There's probably going to be a Direct later this week, which hasn't been confirmed yet, but we know it will. Nintendo normally does things like 3 days ahead of time, so whatever with that. But do you guys think... they can match what they did this year?
Sure.
They could, but, I mean, you have to remember that this year we got both Breath of the Wild and we got Super Mario Odyssey. I mean...
Exactly. Those are the two.
Mario and Zelda, those are hard, hard acts to follow.
Yeah, like, Pokemon seems like potentially a thing they have coming out this year.
Yeah.
Which... we still don't really know much. We just had the developer said, hey,
we also know that we're eventually we also know there's a pretty good chance we're going to get the Bayonetta collection as well,
and
as well as Bayonetta 3.
Yeah.
There's also a real Fire Emblem coming.
Yeah. And of course we mentioned Pokemon, and of course there's going to be all the they're probably going to start at this point going to start wheeling out the Wii U re-releases.
Yeah, the Wii U evacuation project is not yet complete.
Yeah.
Not yet complete, but it's definitely near there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would not be surprised if we start seeing, you know, I would not be surprised if we see a re-release of Xenoblade Chronicles Cross. I also would not be surprised if we start seeing some more big, what do they call them? if they started bringing in some more third-party stuff that we know are supposed to be headed towards the Switch this year. We also probably going to... I would not be surprised if we start seeing some other surprise JRPG stuff.
Yeah. I think Square Enix have kind of tipped their hand.
Yeah.
On Atlas.
Really, the big problem here right now is that it's not so much Nintendo's fault so much as it's the fault of the rest, mostly developers who are kind of having to scramble to, you know, get projects developed for the system because none of them really they all vastly underestimated how popular the Switch was going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, because we have like Dragon Quest Builders. Square Enix has got that coming out in the next couple months.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, we got Wolfenstein 2, that's obviously there. There's the Street Fighter collection. Steep is still coming from Ubisoft. It's like,
I don't know why.
It's still it's like, if that's not out by the time the Winter Olympics happens, just give up.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
it's weird where we're at with the third-party stuff.
Yeah, so Nintendo totally could do this, but honestly, I don't expect them to be able to match what they did. It's virtually impossible to be able to match what you did this year because, you know, you're following Zelda and Mario.
Yeah, and I don't know that they
have... If that's the mentality they take into it, I think they failed already.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if they have the IPs that could do the big sort of potentially innovative things that Breath of the Wild did, and the way Super Mario Odyssey kind of puts a nice bow on the Mario Legacy. of incorporating all the weirdness and some of the structure that some of the previous games have had.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah. I mean, with 2017, you obviously have those two titles, which could easily be called the best in their series by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But what I think Nintendo really did successfully was they managed to stagger a bunch of releases, both first-party and third-party, almost like every month in the Switch's existence. You know, you have games like ARMS, you have Splatoon 2, you have the Mario and Rabbids game. Mm-hmm. Each month had something for Switch owners to look forward to, and I think if they can maintain that same momentum with games like Yoshi, Kirby, and Pokemon, which should be an insane system seller, I mean, you can't really count Pokemon out at all for any reason, so I think that should drive units.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll match what they did in 2017 this year, but past results have shown that a lot of successful consoles had their highest bit of sales on their third year, and that's where games like Metroid come in. So I'm not sure, but from what it looks like, this is not going to be another Wii, because like these games are actually good. It has its share of shovelware, but they're not actually being pushed to the forefront of what Nintendo's doing. So yeah, I think they're pretty solid with that, and there's a lot of rumors saying that the next Direct should be, I don't know, quote unquote E3 level, whatever that may be. But they're in good hands right now, and I think the main thing that we're all overlooking is the fact that you should be able to see them in stores now.
Yeah,
they aren't as softer as they used to be. So
yeah, that. They're in stores now, and you know, as far as what they can do in the second year to continue the momentum. I'm going to actually say something that's probably a little bit controversial. Based on the stuff that they've been doing in the firmware for the past few months, I think is probably very likely. And that's Smash Melee HD Remaster.
I can see that happening.
You do that, you sell buttloads of Switches. Maybe it's not to the people who might have a huge... long-term investment in it, but actually they would, because these are the people who are still playing Melee on the GameCube. They're still going out finding copies. They're still going
There's
out
one problem with
those GameCubes.
Nintendo, as somebody who knows the Smash community as well as I do, Nintendo could bring back Melee. They could re-release it in HD on the Switch and maybe even add a few bells and whistles, but the one thing that Nintendo cannot do is revitalize the CRT TV industry. And that and the Smash Melee community are intrinsically tied together. They will not play these games on an LCD, LED, whatever.
Mm. I mean, they can use the GameCube controller now.
Yep.
That happened in one of the recent updates. I think the other thing we're not really talking about is their whole network stuff is going live this year.
Stuff. Yep. That's actually
that got delayed again till at least spring.
Yeah.
Possibly fall.
Actually, because Phil mentioned it, I actually do have to say he brought up about bringing sort of an HD remaster of Melee. But to be perfectly honest, if they do a Smash game, I'm actually convinced it's going to be more of a release of Smash Brothers on the Wii U.
Yep.
That would probably be the easier thing to do.
You can put the Amiibo stuff in there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would match the theme of the Wii U evacuation plan.
Yeah.
Because it just makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, a remastered 4 would be the best possible option. Otherwise, they'd be wasting all those licenses with Cloud and Bayonetta and all those other new characters.
And Capcom and all those different... Hmm.
You know, if anything, Nintendo wants Melee to die more than anybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still. Because for the record, I would like to have the Smash on Wii U game for the Switch, because I haven't played it.
Mm. It's really good.
Yeah, it's really good. So.
Yeah, it won Smash Bros. Game of the Year.
Yeah. But
yeah, it seems like another potential like Mario Kart 8 situation where it's like this game that people liked a lot, but not many people owned the things that it was on.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Wii U was it was a garbage fire.
Yeah. Its lifetime sales got surpassed in 10 months by the Switch.
Yep. It's already in Japan it's already been eclipsed. So.
Yeah. And the fact that it's, mobile, I think is what really does it because Holy crap, Japanese freaking love playing on the go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you can still see, like, PSPs and Vitas and GBAs.
Oh, you still do. They still release shit for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess the main thing with their success with the whole hybrid thing is the fact that now that all of their developers are in one house now, it just makes things a whole lot easier. Yeah. They don't even have to think about, you know, have to downscale certain games or whatnot, so they can just focus on making the games as good as they can.
Yeah. Yeah, and apparently Nintendo is working on a common engine now for their games, so that could help development quite a bit. So,
ooh, that if they made a common engine, that would be like that would really, not only would that step up their game, because it would mean that, you know, they don't have to build a game from scratch every single time.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if it was a lot better than the engine they used for Breath of the Wild.
It also means that they would have the potential to be able to let other, you know, they could let other developers commission them for it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if Nintendo wants to become a middleware company, but they could very
well. If they're going to make money, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
So everyone here knows Nintendo likes money.
Yeah.
And they don't always act like it.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah. But the way I see it, Nintendo needs two big releases for 2018. They'll probably have those in probably the summer and right before the holiday. And then it's going to be a matter of just staggering out the more niche and the smaller independent releases from, you know, third parties and whatever.
Yeah,
kind of following the same model that they had last year, and I think they're going to be good.
Mm.
So
yeah, I mean we're getting Owlboy next month.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. I've never played it. I have it on Steam. Don't care.
Yeah, like smaller Nintendo stuff. We got like Kirby Star Allies is also out this spring. Like Yoshi is also supposed to be coming out.
Yeah,
so there's some interesting stuff coming this year, and then Indies. It's just like
all over the place.
Can you get the development kit? If so, release it.
Yeah.
There Hopefully. Is one. If there's one thing from all of this we can say now, it's this. Nintendo is back. They're a contender again.
Yeah. Yeah. Sony is now taking them seriously. So
yeah,
they should. Because
now we need the OS to step up.
Yeah, now they
just, it is crumbling under the weight of
everything.
All this stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know, I went and tried to download all the demos they had on there, and man, that I need folders. The way they do that stuff, if you have more games than it can hold, is bad.
Yeah,
and I don't think it can download while you're playing a game either. At least
I think it depends
from
what
I've experienced.
I think it depends on whether it's a network-dependent game or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like when I first got my Switch, I was like, wow, this is a really clean interface. And as I got more and more games, I was like, oh man, this is a really
this is a really shit interface.
Yeah, like there's the weird things when you want to delete the game. There's like archiving it and deleting it. Both still leave the save, but the descriptions don't really explain what the difference is. It's like whether you want to delete the data but keep the icon in the save there, or delete it and keep the save like hidden somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like you can't manage saves, you can't, the video stuff is still not universal.
Yeah.
So it's playing some games and like, oh, I can't capture video from this.
Yeah.
I'll just keep my video of Mario jumping on a dog's head. It's like dumb stuff like that, but yeah, it's like one of the things is like playing Persona 5 again, remembering that every time I earn a trophy, it says, cannot take a screenshot. It's like, you guys are fucking idiots. I'm still keeping this here.
Oh, my God.
Because that game looks so good, I'd love to take screenshots all the time.
Yeah.
And just keep all this good stuff in some sort of form. But they fought so hard against that. It's only when I do, like, external capture that I can get some of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's... Nintendo needs.
Imagine how I felt when I had to review the game. I couldn't do anything at all.
Yeah, you have to have like an Elgato to take screenshots or anything like that.
Yeah.
And that's that whole dumb thing of trying to play and keep an eye on the player to hit the screenshot button.
Yeah.
There's a setting in there that'll just take a screenshot every 5 seconds. So. But then you have, like, thousands of screenshots that you have to go through.
Yeah. It's like either you just comb through footage and like, that looks okay, I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
So.
But yeah, I guess that's pretty much it with what we have to say about the big three as far as 2018 and beyond. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we all represent the same publication, so I just wanted to hear your thoughts about what you're looking forward to as a Smashpad staffer and the rest of the gaming public in general.
Well, as a Smashpad staffer, finally finishing the redesign, so that's going to be good.
Oh yeah, we have changes coming.
Yes.
Yes.
So yeah, look forward to that as soon as I finish them. As far as the gaming industry in general goes, I'm looking forward to the continued perception of loot boxes as a curse word. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm hoping that continues to gain momentum because they kind of do ruin the game in many, many ways. So that's me.
Yeah. As a Smashpad staffer, I think the thing I'm looking forward to the most is just seeing our line of podcasts finally expand in 2018. Irons are still in the fire, I promise, and it's just a matter of coordinating and getting everything moving in that direction, and I think good things have been happening in that regard. Mm. In the gaming realm in general, I'm very interested in seeing the direction of the fighting genre, which I really feel like is at a crossroads right now in terms of what does it value, what types of games do we want to build around as we move forward, and that's kind of going off into another project that Phil and I are working on that we'll be talking about in the weeks ahead, but it really feels as though studios are going into development on fighting games with that mentality in mind. And, you know, so much the better if we can kind of move away from these consumable fighting games that are only relevant for a few months or a couple years, then we can really start to build around the ones that stand the test of time. And I think we have a couple of those in the pipeline right now, to be completely honest. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes. And that's really what I'm looking forward to in 2018, as well as seeing this renaissance of classic JRPGs, of classical JRPGs. Mm-hmm. You got Falcom, you've got Square Enix getting involved finally. You've got Atlas with Project ReFantasy. I'm really excited to see these projects come into fruition. And it should be a really good year for those. Mm. So that's my take.
All right. Well, as for me, my take as far as gaming industry goes, I'm looking to seeing basically loot boxes being completely vaporized off the face of the earth.
It might take legislation to do it, but it's probably going to happen.
Yeah. I think EA really seriously overplayed their hand this year, and they are paying for it now. Mm.
And they're going to keep paying.
Yeah.
Because, it was bad enough with the stuff that they tried to pull with Middle-Earth Shadow of War. Like, that in and of itself was already, like, at the worst that they had gotten at that point. But then they tried to pull this with Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, they messed with the mouse. And that was their worst mistake ever. And we are not going to let them forget it.
Yeah. I'll point out the microtransactions have not come back yet, by the way.
No, and everybody remain vigilant and make sure they don't.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, if EA tries to, you get on their asses about it.
Yeah.
Because do not let them forget that they did this and make them suffer for it.
Yeah. And along those lines, I would also keep an eye out for UFC 3. That's supposed to be coming out, I think, next month.
Yeah, and that one apparently was... The loot boxing trashed. Was even... Yeah. So, again, if they try to pull this crap still with UFC, do not let them ignore it. You've got to make it known to them. Make your displeasure known. Yep. You know, storm the barricades if you have to.
Yep.
Do not let them get away with this crap.
Yeah.
Also, because like I mentioned, one of my most anticipated games for this year is Anthem.
Yeah.
Which is BioWare, which is published by EA.
Yeah.
And EA better, you know, have a come here with an open hand here, because do not let them do to BioWare what they've done to Visceral, what they've done to Pandemic. Mm. You know, just don't.
Yeah.
Don't mess with my BioWare.
Yeah.
All right. And as for Smash Pad itself, I am looking forward to us expanding. We are on top of having our podcast line, expanding to other topics. We are also getting, of course, we're getting a new website that's being developed by Phil here. And we've got another very major, very secret project we're not mentioning yet, but it's a big deal, and it's going to kind of bring a whole new dimension to Smash Pad as a site. Do not, you know, so look out for that. I have a feeling a good chunk of our audience is definitely going to love it. Also, as far as podcasts go, our listenership has been growing. We are now getting, especially on Let's Weekend, from where we started, we now have double the amount of listeners and regular downloaders that we have.
Shit.
Yeah, it's pretty large, and it's staying consistent too.
Yeah.
So
we'll keep that going in 2018.
Yeah. So that's me. So Chris.
For the site itself, I think I'm very much looking forward to expanding our video coverage a bit more, getting more of you guys involved in that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Through what means I can do that. I got ideas for that. When we got the right games, we'll definitely try to pull some of you guys into that. But for now, I got some video ideas for things coming up in the near future that will be a way of combating some of the shit that's going on outside of our houses.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are themed to our seasons and stuff, so that'll be interesting when I get a good list of what I want to do there going. But for the industry, I'm going to be selfish and say I want Nintendo to release a Switch Lite that's actually portable. I can stick in my damn pocket and take it with me.
Hmm.
You know, just fuse the Joy-Cons onto the device. No more having to worry about them breaking off,
mm-hmm.
Not sticking anymore. So have it essentially look like a Vita.
Hmm.
Be about that size, and that would work pretty much perfectly.
So you want to feed Beast, you want us to buy more Switches. That's what you're saying.
I want to buy a proper portable Switch. Because that thing just stays on the dock all the time I pull it off. But I don't want to switch the input on my TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ultimate laziness. So I don't want to even switch the inputs. I'm just going to pull you out of here for now. Yeah, so that's definitely something I want to happen.
Mm.
And guess what? That would probably be cheaper.
Yeah.
$200 would be really nice. $250 maybe with some good storage in there.
Mm.
Obviously having the Nintendo Network upgraded enough so that make it a lot easier to transfer your saves and such between them would be really nice. As for other stuff, I don't know. I'm looking forward to seeing what indie developers out there have going on. We know a lot of some of the stuff that's going on out there. But it's always the unknowns that is really exciting. You know, like when we had SteamWorld Dig 2 kind of come out of nowhere and be the big deal it was. Pyre was kind of known, but we were still like unsure what that would all work out into being.
Hmm.
You know, there's kind of like the sports thing, but there's also a story. But what's the mix? It's like, no, it's more visual novel where you get to play some American Gladiators every once in a while.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, it's indie stuff that is really cool, because that's where all the surprises come from for the most part.
Mm.
That's what I'm looking forward to.
Cool. As a Smash Pad staffer, I'm going to try to work more on augmenting our staff, adding more people. You know, it's easier said than done. We've had the same core for more than 5 years now. But as I've continued to, like, be a part of more communities, just by going on different Facebook groups and stuff like that, finding some interesting people, working on their writing skills, and it's interesting. On my part on content, I'm going to do my best to do more video stuff. I know I said the same thing last year, but it should be more of a focal point this year. Now that I have a PC laptop, I just need more software to do more stuff. And it should be interesting. Now that football season is over, I'll be more involved with Day Zero. So while Lee and Teresa continue to do their best to be here, I'll fill in the best way possible. Mm-hmm. And as far as the gaming landscape goes, we'll see how things go. Like Brandon said, like a lot of us hate microtransactions. I work for a mobile gaming company, and that's the reason why we're alive in the first place. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I'm going into year like 2.5, and like, you know, I enjoy things like having a free lunch and having a fat bonus. So with the changes that Apple and Google are going to make with the mandated changes to loot boxes and stuff, I'm interested to see how that moves forward. But I do believe we have like the right people in place to continue to be a profitable studio, so I don't plan on having my job be any worse anytime soon. Mm. But so I guess that's pretty much it.
All right. So that's our 2018 look ahead. So before we finish up for the week, we do, you know, the picks of the week that we started doing a few weeks. This week's pick for me is kind of cool. Retrobit. They've been making clone consoles and accessories and the like for a few years now. Now they've got licenses with several well-known publishers of the day. Mainly right now it's Jellico and Data East. And they've released compilation cartridges for the NES and SNES. They've got four of them available so far. Particular the Data East stuff and the Jellico stuff that I've been looking forward to, because they've got a Jellico Brawlers pack, which mm-hmm. Includes Rival Turf, Brawl Brothers, Tough Enough, and the Peacekeepers. So yeah, for quite fun Brawlers for the SNES. That
that ain't bad.
Yeah, not bad for $35. And it's a brand new cartridge.
Super affordable.
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's that. They've also got Data East Classics, which is kind of stretching the word classics a little bit, but on there is Fighter's History 2, which I should point out was never released in the U.S., and that's the Japanese mm-hmm. version that's on that cartridge. Probably, if I were them, I probably would have gone the extra mile and have that translated, but they didn't. Also comes with Magical Drop 1 and 2 and Side Pocket. So
sold.
Yep. Also $35. And there's Joe and Mac Ultimate Collection, which includes Joe and Mac 2, which didn't make its way over here, and Congo Scaper. So that's, you know, pretty good there. Those are all three of the SNES compilations. The NES one, it had Ring King on it, so I'm not entirely sure why that was chosen, but that's on there.
Oh, I know that game. That's the one where the ring girls do blowjobs on the boxers in the the corners.
It's
very suggestive things, and you can also just hug it out with the guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's, it's Bad Dudes, Buggy Popper, Burger Time, Ring King, and Side Pocket as well.
I'll be honest, I remember Buggy Pooper. Mm-hmm. I like that name better. I want that game.
Yeah. So, yeah, and this is what we're starting to see from Retrobit. And that's $30, by the way. So, yeah, brand new cartridges licensed by the original publishers. I'm liking what I'm seeing from them so far.
Mm-hmm.
I've got more Retrobit news for my pick of the week. Sega has tapped them to reproduce Genesis, Saturn, and Dreamcast hardware.
Hmm.
So this is good news twofold, because not only do we get new Saturns and Dreamcasts out in the wild, which is very important, it also implies that Sega is starting to wean itself off of VAT games.
Yeah.
Which could not happen fast enough.
Now, they haven't actually announced what that hardware is going to be as of yet.
Yeah, they're just saying that it will feature modern amenities like Bluetooth and USB and what have you.
Yeah, give me a Dreamcast with HDMI. Sold.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
I would stream all of the things.
Yeah. Because as long as it takes regular Dreamcast discs, we're ready to go. Maybe have an ability to download games. That'd be cool, too. Anyways.
So do these guys
make depends on how much support Sega actually wants to give it.
What happened to your dog? You're just out for
Ooh.
What
the fuck was that?
So do these guys do the clone consoles, or do they do like what the Nintendo's been doing?
Well, they've done clone consoles. They do plug-and-play consoles as well, so kind of both.
Okay.
They also do like a line of controllers and AV adaptors and power
cables. Yeah, I'd be curious when we get the first of like the disc-based clone consoles.
Mm. Yeah, that'll be a good day.
So I know the Dreamcast got blown wide open right away, so I don't know if that's going to be a hard thing for somebody to do.
Well, I don't think that they...
I don't think they worry about
it. I don't think
it
would be in their best interest to shy away from that, because
if
you release a Dreamcast in 2018 and it doesn't support those burned games, this is going to be a controversial statement. Good luck finding software for it.
Yeah, because a lot of stuff has gotten real expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem is if you want to retain compatibility for the old games in general, you can't change the way that the console boots. So
I could see like a Dreamcast, like if you have one of those Bleem discs, potentially just opening up PS1 through that.
Yeah.
Though I'd imagine it probably wouldn't be hard to just put the emulators on a disc and have that run normally anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But people like doing weird shit.
Oh yeah.
Going through like a weird Dreamcast PS1 emulator and just doing it way just because.
The other fact of the matter is that I've used Bleemcast in the past, like the full thing, not just the kind of cherry-picked version that ended up in retail.
Yeah.
All of those games ran like asshole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's why it was cherry-picked.
Yeah, though I imagine the hardware probably would not be... It probably wouldn't be that hard to have better hardware that wouldn't fall to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Or just do it better by default.
Hmm.
Yeah, the funny part about the Dreamcast is you actually wouldn't have to do very much to create a chip that's completely compatible with the Dreamcast and also more powerful, because that's what ended up in phones.
Yep.
And is still being used. So, yeah, that's all well-known hardware.
Yeah, we're basically walking around with little Dreamcasts as it is.
Yeah. So. All right, Brandon?
All right, well, so as I've said before, I am a BioWare fan, and I am a Dragon Age fan. And anybody who's played Dragon Age knows that one of the big characters in the Dragon Age universe is Varric, who is he's one of the dwarves, and he basically runs as a mercenary and a spy network. But he also makes a bunch of money as a writer, and he's a very popular novelist within the universe of Dragon Age. And in fact, in both Dragon Age 2 and Dragon Age Inquisition, in each of those games, the work you can pick, one of the particular missions you can do is you can pick up serialized pieces of one of his books per game. And what's happening now is that in this summer, Dark Horse is going to be releasing an actual physical copy of one of Varric's books.
Ooh.
Specifically, it's Hard Up in Heart in Hightown, which is the book that you collect in Dragon Age 2. It's going to be all the pieces that you could collect and read in the game in one actual physical copy, all of it illustrated. And if you look at the link, you can see the cover they've got is like an old-fashioned sort of pulp mystery cover. Mm. Now, it is under 100 pages, so it's more of a novella than an actual novel. Because, but it's so awesome. I'm guessing if this is successful, they're going to do the same thing for the game they did in Dragon Age Inquisition. I doubt that they're going to put out anything for Swords and Shields because apparently that book is so smutty that it actually makes the in-game characters of Dragon Age blush. So,
yeah,
there's like a whole subquest in Dragon Age Inquisition about that. It's hilarious. But that's mine. So, Chris, what about you?
If you remember the big PSN holiday sale we told you about a few weeks ago, it's still going on, and it's still got tons of great stuff in there. They're on week 4 of 5, and it's been one of the best sales I've seen in a long time on any platform, really, because there's just been tons of games as part of this. New stuff's still getting added every week, and there's a bunch of stuff here people should definitely check out. Like Last Guardian's $20 if you haven't checked that out yet. There's a good bit of VR stuff. Like Capcom put all their Resident Evil stuff on sale. And a weird thing, they made 4, 5, and 6 $8 each and then put the bundle of all three for $30.
Okay.
So if you
somebody
thought they just...
math.
Yeah, it's... That's the Capcom in them. They can't type things. Resogun's $3. If you still don't have that, Counter Spies on there is real good. Rocket League, Hitman, Pixel Junk Shooter Ultimate. There's tons of good stuff here. If you're on, Pyre, Transistor, and Bastion are all on sale. Those are all real good games. Pyre's $10, half off. Definitely recommended. There's a good bit of VR stuff in there if you're looking for things to get if you bought a new one recently. Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruins, $10. That's a real good one because that's pretty much a VR adventure game. It's really well designed and fits that art style really well. So there's a lot of cool stuff here. N++ is $7.49. They just released the Ultimate Edition update for it on PS4, which doubles the amount of content that's in that game. So that's over 4,000 levels. So, yeah, if you're short on money and need something to last you for a while, there you go. 4,000 levels, that's going to last you for a while.
Yeah.
Because you're also going to kick yourself. Because you're going to die tons. So, that's a sale people should still be checking out. Lots of good stuff in there.
Okay, so Danrip, last pick.
Mine is going to be a game that has been talked about in previous podcasts. It's Doki Doki Literature Club. Patrick laughs because that's how crazy he is. This game will fuck with your mind. If you went to check it out, you'll be like, oh, it's one of those stupid teensy Japanese visual novels.
No, it is not.
No, it's not. It's a fucking horror game that'll fuck you in so many ways you didn't know possible. Like, there'll be a point in the game where you'll actually have to go into your game data and delete some shit in order to move on. And once it got to that point for me, I was
some
like,
shit.
Oh my god, this is insane. There's some twists and turns in there that are like not for the squeamish or weak-hearted, but it's just the amount of detail the developers put into making this game the experience that it is simply incredible. I went ahead and broke my own rules and put 13 games in my top 10, and Doki Doki was on it. Like, if I had finished it before making my list, it would have been 9 or 10 easily. The game is that good, and it's free. So,
I had a lot of trouble figuring out how to quantify that game for a best of list because there are things that it could have done further than what it did, but at the same time, it was free, so I can't really complain about missing content.
Yeah.
And the way they implemented some of those things, any way made sense in the context. So I don't know.
If you remember, and the thing you have to remember about Doki Doki Literature Club is that part of the reason it's free is that on top of being a sort of contained experience in and of itself, it's also meant to be sort of a introduction to what their next project is going to be.
And that in its own right is why I have now, you know, followed Team Salvato in every way possible. So, yeah. Looking forward to what the hell they're going to do next. And if we have to pay for it, by all means, I'll pay for it. Screw it. Yeah. But, yeah. Doki Doki Literature Club. It's not a visual novel.
No.
Well, I mean, it well, plays like one.
It's just not the kind that you think it is at the start.
I'd say more, but as anybody else would say, if you really want to enjoy the full experience, go into it not knowing anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just play it and then stick with it, because it does take a little while to build.
Mm. Yes, it does.
Yeah.
After that first hour and a half, it's just it's no longer smooth sailing. It's far from smooth.
Yeah.
It's quite pixely.
So that's going to do it for the week. Considering nothing happened this week, there was actually quite a bit to talk about. So with that, I'd like to remind you guys that if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, or your various favorite RSS readers or podcast aggregators. And you can also check us out at smashpad.com, where we're continually uploading stuff. And more changes to come there. So with that, I'm Filippo Genofo.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Sologi.
And I'm Dan Red Victoria.
See you all next week.